after 18 years of remembering just exactly that, that it is no surprise that, that is the case. But anyway, thanks for being here. Thanks for sharing this space. At the beginning of the year, just after we finished a banner theme, a ministry theme, encouraging us to welcome one another just as Christ welcomes us, it seemed appropriate to then talk about getting to know one another. Welcome one another, and now let's know one another just as we are known by God. And there are a number of ways we can do that, a number of helpful ways. One of them, of course, is hearing one another's stories. And so that's what we've been doing in the 9:30 hour here, is carving out this purposeful space to listen. And it's wonderful how in hearing someone else's story, you begin to hear your own story as well. What you hear from them begins to resonate with what you've experienced and gives you words for the very experiences you've had also. And so hopefully this will continue to be a good space for us to hear from one another and to, you know, to share life, the life that we missed during the pandemic season. So as a reminder, the last couple of weeks I've shared with you, and I'll share with you again, you know, questions that we asked that first week we sat together, questions I've posed to several of our presenters, not that they have to answer these questions specifically, but just for us to each be thinking about. And these are, again, questions for you as well. And the questions are this: when you think back on the pandemic season, January 2020 to the present, as you think back on that, what's one change you personally have experienced, either directly related to COVID or unrelated? What is something about you that has shifted because of this season? And no doubt there is something, many things most likely about each of us. And it's good to acknowledge that. And where it's good, to rejoice over it. And where it's disappointing, to lament it. And so that's part of what we're doing here as we share these stories. I'm recognizing the people on Zoom, I'm sure can't hear it, that all of this has like a background soundtrack right now with the worship team right over there, if you can hear them. It's quite lovely. Be still my soul while we're saying all this. Second question, how did the pandemic season impact your home life? How did it impact your work life, if it did in some way? Your social life, no doubt it did that. Your spiritual life. Your economic life. It had impacts, and we're taking space to name those, to acknowledge them, to be honest with one another about them, and to just hear what our lives were like in that time. And then finally, what's one thing you learned about yourself during the pandemic season? What is something that perhaps you didn't know or didn't fully acknowledge, but the pandemic season brought it out for good or bad? And taught you about yourself. Again, we're attempting to name those things for ourselves and for one another as we come to know one another just as God knows us. So that's part of the hope we have here this morning. And I hope that as we hear other people's stories, we can also begin to hear our story even better. So for the past few weeks, we've had several people share, and I'm delighted this morning that Lou is going to share with us share a bit about what his experience was like. You know, it wasn't too long after he was finishing his time here that the pandemic hit. And so after being so very public for us for all these decades, all of a sudden Lou is transitioning in life and we're not getting to experience it. Because we're not around him regularly because the pandemic kept us apart. So I'm delighted that he has opportunity to share with us. And I also wanted to invite each of you on Wednesday when Melinda was presenting, she was saying, man, I would love to hear from every single person in the room. And I know as you hear that, for some of you, you think, I am not standing up in front of people telling my story. But the point was, it would be really good to hear from as many people as possible, a variety of people. It's good for each of us to hear that. So if you would be interested in sharing your pandemic story, please let me know. A couple of you have, and I'm grateful for that. Please let me know, because people want to hear it. Not because it's been big and some significant thing has happened. No, just to hear about your life. We want to know what's gone on with you, and that's important for us. So anyway, with all that said, grateful that Lewis is sharing today, and let's welcome him as he does.
I must say it's a different rhythm for me on Sunday mornings anymore to anticipate coming and having a public voice. I've willingly, and I'm a little loud there. Can we bring that down a bit? That reminds me. Alf and I have a saying, whenever we're in a situation where we feel like we've dominated the space verbally, enough about me, what do you think about me? You know, I think one of the reasons I transitioned from public voice to private citizen here is I think at some level I felt like enough about me, enough of me here at East County. And I will say over the last 3 years of transition from public to private that I've really appreciated that shift and enjoyed becoming part of East County in a different way. It's odd that I did that while we were apart for the most part, and we are all separate from one another. By the way, let me say, don't hesitate to stop me by asking questions or redirecting me if you feel like you need to. I want this to be more of a conversation than a monologue, even though I'm going to do all the talking. Last night, so a little pandemic story. Last night, we had a delightful time with the Davises. Kurt and Diana Davis invited our family over. And during the course of the evening, one of the things that Kurt said was that it took a little grandbaby, their little grandbaby, Emmett, who's just had his first birthday. It took this little grandbaby to bring us together as families, which was pretty neat. And I think when he first said it, I was a little resistant to it. And then part of me thought, yeah, that's exactly what happened. Alpha takes care of Emmett 3 afternoons a week for a few hours. And which reminds me that, I don't know how many years ago now, we did something similar with the Bartanians when they had their twins. It was pre-grandchildren for us. And Alpha moved in, and I think I followed, to start spending time with the twins, Jake and Amelia, for their first year. I think every week they were with us. Then we had our own grandchildren. 3 years, Alpha says. And now our grandchildren are kind of growing, and we needed another grandbaby. So fortunately, we found one in Emmett. So we were with the Davises last night. Had a great time. I spent more time with Kurt talking about the San Francisco Giants and the 49ers and reminiscing than I ever have in my life. I left there full of the goodness of that part of who I am. And then I also walked away. Do you do this often? You know, after you get away from an experience like that, thinking, oh, I shouldn't have said this, and I spent too much time doing that. And, you know, the older I become, the more I'm like that. You would think you'd become more settled in yourself. That has not been my experience. So let me step away from last night. Thursday morning at 10:30, I was at work. Mary's Woods Retirement Community in Lake Oswego. At the center of that community, there's a chapel, and that chapel is just down the hall from my office, so I travel back and forth by that chapel often. Well, I was walking by at 10:30-ish Thursday morning. My supervisor, I ran into her. She was going in. They were having what they call a reconciliation service, which they do once a month, which is a communal experience of what we might think in the Catholic tradition as confession. And so it's a 20-minute service. She said, I'm going to go in. Do you want to you're welcome to come. And I, you know, I've been there a year and a half, never done that. I walked by more than once and seen that happening. And so I thought, yeah, I'll go in. I went in. Was a wonderful 20-minute experience. I have a good relationship with the priest who leads the public services there. And so you remember the week we just had. This is Thursday morning. And so quickly a focus on the tragedy in Texas and the overwhelming ongoing war in Ukraine. So he mentioned those things. And he focused on the people who have been hurt in both of those. And then he shared a note that a nun had given him. And it had been years before. He's been the priest there for 20 years plus. By the way, he's 85 years old, which kind of puts him right in the middle of the demographic there. Not too old, not too young. He reads this note from the from the sister who's been dead for a number of years now. But he's held on to this note that she shared with him. And it said something like this: that I have been discovering that the more I lower my expectations of myself and others, that I am finding peace. And that's what he used, and he spent a little time with that, which I found life-giving, which is a good reminder. And I share that as just, if you're wondering what my life is like these days, there's an example of what my life is like. Yesterday morning, I work Saturdays now, and I don't work Sundays, so kind of nice. I went in at 6 o'clock in the morning yesterday. I had a full day at 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon. I was going to do a memorial service in Lake Oswego, but not where I work. And it was for a person who had died 6 months ago. And because of COVID, it took actually more like 7 or 8 months ago. It took that long for her family to be able to orchestrate this. So I knew I had that. I had a full day in front of me. So I go in that early thinking I'm going to have time to sit down and pull everything together that I want to say. By the way, I knew I was doing this morning. I had been anticipating through the week having opportunities to gather together what I would say. That never really happened. So I go with that on my mind as well. I get there, I begin getting settled. And I go downstairs to check on a person, only to discover, this is like a couple minutes after 7 a.m, she just died. I'm the only chaplain there. And so that requires of me everything that's going to be done in a moment like that by Mary's Woods, which is probably a 2-hour commitment that I don't have. And I have two or three other things that I have to do while I'm there yesterday. And the number one reason that I am at Mary's Woods is for moments like that. So I have this conflict in my heart. Navigated it, running. I told Alpha I was, you know, chaplains aren't supposed to run. It's just like a chaplain rule, don't run. I violated that a few times yesterday. Sweating, and I'm thinking, you know, I've got to do this memorial service at 4 o'clock. I'm going to stink. There's no anyway. It was a good day. I was able to be with this person's family. And one of the things that we do at Mary's Woods when someone dies is we have a procession, we call it. So we don't sneak them out the back door, you know, under wraps, literally under wraps, which is what could happen. But instead, we alert all of the caregivers and the neighbors. And we tell them that one of our beloved neighbors and residents has died. And we have people who will gather. We'll tell them about when it's going to happen. They'll start gathering. And they literally follow this person out. and we get outside the building and we stop and we do like 10 to 15 minute goodbye. And we did that yesterday. And it's, you know, it's a powerful moment. It's a wonderful, sacred moment that I've discovered in chaplaincy. Things like that happen in the hospital, not a procession, but I learned quickly as I stepped into this that there's a proper open-eyed, open-hearted way to be around somebody and their family when they die. And I feel like chaplaincy offers that gift to the world and has offered that gift to me. That procession yesterday morning brought together two family members who had significant tension. And the ritual of that procession allowed both of them space to feel good and positive. Even though one of the people, very private, and that procession felt overly public. The other one kind of the opposite. You know, this isn't enough. We need more. But it was significant to watch it happen again, and you can imagine with, you know, a couple of dozen people following with them, honoring, speaking words about the one who died. How much that meant to both of them to hear that in the midst of their profound grief. And then I went and did this memorial service, as smelling as I may have been, which is both of those, all of those stories, including the story with the Davises, by the way, I share those as an indication of how my life has changed. When I came to that place, and you were all with me as I came to the place where I felt like I need to make a change. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again. I'll remind you how gracious you have been to me in that transition over the last 3 years. So I say thank you again. Thank you for your grace. I've mentioned you a number of times in the last few years to people who don't know you, how good you've been to us. That as I made that transition, you may remember it's been 3 years ago right now that I finished my first unit of CPE. You may or may not remember that I told you that it was incrementally transformational. That's the term I came up with. And it really has been a transformation. I wanted to begin this morning, before I decided to tell those stories, with a quote from Brueggemann, which participates in my former world and life. The world for which you have been so carefully prepared is being taken away from you, and that by the grace of God. And I think there's something to that. I find that to characterize what's happened in my life over the last 3 years. That a life that I had lived for 40 years in church was being taken away from me. Not without my choice, it was by my choice. But I want you to know I really felt that it was necessary for that to happen. That in a way I didn't feel like I had a choice. And I think I know I have discovered in a new season in my life, something that is so life-giving to me, that it is indeed the grace of God, that it's the next chapter in a quite charmed life that I've lived as an adult. And most of you, probably many of you, if not most, know my story growing up. I grew up in a charmed context. And so to end up living the life we've lived and the life that we've been able to offer to our children with the goodness that is there for us and for them is indeed the grace of God. And I found this to be that as well. You remember last week when Danny and Boone were talking, and Danny said she used this image of, you know, you had to be able to close a door completely before you could walk into the other. I'm not sure I could ever do that. And I think what I did is more like, you know, those rings at the playground where you swing from one ring and you grab the other. I'm the guy who had to have both before I could let go and then have to get momentum going again and grab the other once I had it. And I think that describes what's happened for me the last 3 years because of, again, you allowing this to happen. I could hold on to both for a while. And then when I could feel secure enough to let go, I let go. And that's been a great letting go. It's been wonderful for me to become part of East County. And it strikes me that I couldn't do that just anywhere. And not just any minister could do that, to stay here. This is my family. This is my home. And it's not hard for me to behave myself and stay out of things. You can ask Kevin, you could ask the shepherds. I've kept my nose out of things for the last months. And I've also felt the relief of being able to do that as things have come along, I think. Yeah. It's kind of nice not to have to respond to that. So, I moved to being a chaplain. And I'll have to tell you that, you know, 4 years ago, what I thought about chaplaincy is not what chaplaincy is. I think I looked at chaplaincy as a pretty superficial and facile profession where, you know, people go visit people they don't know and they're nice to them. And then they say goodbye and go see somebody else. And I thought, yeah. That sounds pretty tasteless to me. That is not what chaplaincy is. It could not be more incorrect. And so one of the gifts of the last 3 years is for me to discover how significant it is as a human to step into a crisis with other humans. And in the midst of the darkness and the fear, that I could sit with somebody and be present in their fear and their despair and their darkness and actually learn how not to try to change that or fix it for somebody. Because I think as a pastor, I had developed these instincts, which worked reasonably well in the church context for the most part. My instincts, I think, pastorally are very strong as a teacher, as a guide, as one who wants to offer wisdom and direction. Those instincts are not really helpful as a chaplain. And so one of the things that I have to fight in my work is that strong instinct when I hear you share your story, to then give you guidance and direction. Well, here's what I think you should do. Here's what I think could be helpful to you. I have to resist that. Because when I'm directing and offering guidance to folks, it is life giving to me. It's like I feel the goodness of being able to offer goodness to you. And that's what goodness has been to me for all these years. So I would say over the last 3 years during the pandemic, I've learned to be a better listener. I've learned how to listen to people and know as I listen, and I haven't done this completely, but I've made my way down the road a bit. I've learned how to listen to people and to be aware of me so that I can keep myself somewhat out of the way in that encounter with another human. I become more aware of how I get in the way in those encounters. And what really does happen to me that may take me away from you while I'm sitting with you?
One thing that I know happened with the pandemic that changed for you is having to not be present personally, but had to start being on the phone, staying at home, being on the phone, doing this same work. And so I think it'd be good to share how that.
Yeah, I don't know if you heard that. So the first 3 months of the pandemic, I moved from working in the hospital to working at home to avoid COVID and still participate in that. They offered me the opportunity to do that, which was a wonderful gift, so I could continue that residency and finish it. My main motivation for leaving the hospital and working from home, which if you can imagine trying to do chaplaincy work on a telephone with someone you don't know, and they're in a hospital bed. And I don't know if you've ever used hospital phones. It's a complicated reality. That aside, I think what drove me to that was my fear that I would somehow bring COVID home to Alpha. And what could happen with that? So that said, I spent 3 months learning that I would never want to do telechaplaincy. But I had some really good experiences. They were difficult. But it would be amazing to think that you could actually talk to a stranger on the phone while they're in the hospital and have something good and positive happen in that. I also had probably the story that stands out the most for me in those 3 months is I called a person and he could never figure out, how did you get my information? How do you know where I'm at? Are you out in the hall? Who told you about me? And I, after 15 minutes, I said, I tell you what, I'm going to reach out to one of my colleagues who will come in the room and see you. rough. So stepping back a bit from that, here's what I think characterizes a little bit of the change that's happened in our world. To come to a place in our experience where being together with others could be potentially deadly, to me, is part of what's happened in the pandemic. And we've moved to become more comfortable. I mean, look at us right now. We've somehow lived with that. And the other is that wearing masks in the last 2 years is an act of solidarity that recognizes vulnerability. Now that's a different world. That is a different world to experience. You think metaphor, you know, take your mask off, right? If you really want to be known and seen, remove your masks. We've lived for 2 years where wearing a mask is communicating love and connection and solidarity. And I find that striking and transformational, that those are realities that have become part of our stories and our lives. Last week, we had a life group meeting over at the White House after church. And one of the things that became a common narrative in our life group last week, if you were there, you remember, I'm an introvert. And so the pandemic was, and I was surprised how many people in our life group were self-describing as introverts. I mean, so much so that after we went around the circle, I wanted to actually say, well, I'm Lewis, I'm not an introvert. I just want to be contrary. But I am, I guess, somewhat of an introvert. But also, I think I've journeyed in my years to be more of kind of an introverted extrovert or an extroverted introvert or somewhere in the middle there. Part of that, I think, is just because being in the work that I was in, you develop the intention of connecting with people. And I think I've done that. For all these years, I've become much more comfortable, which, by the way, set me up really well to be a chaplain, where you walk in and you're encountering strangers all the time. All the time. You're a stranger meeting a stranger. And to be able to quickly build some rapport and even trust in within a few minutes is part of what I think came out of the life I lived as a pastor. And so, good stuff. Any questions you have, by the way? We're nearing the end of my time to share with you. Repeat what? Yeah. Let me find it. The world for which you have been so carefully prepared is being taken away from you, and that by the grace of God. Another thing I think I want to share, unless someone has something they want me to talk about, is I feel like spending all the years that I did in church modestly and moderately formed and shaped me to offer something good to the community. And I think part of what moved me to, and hear these words the way I intend them, what moved me to leave church and move into the world was that I felt like I had something to offer the world. And it wasn't, hey, I'm a Christian and I want to offer you salvation. It wasn't that, depending on how you would define that. But it was offering, I could be a good presence to some people in the world. And it just so happens that the best way that could happen for me would be through chaplaincy. And after a year in the hospital, I thought, you know, I really want to work in the hospital. I'd grown to love the energy of a hospital. There was something compelling about when you walked in the door in any morning, every morning, you would encounter things that you had no idea you would encounter, and encounter people. So there was the energy of the hospital that was engaging and compelling to me. And after a year, I thought, I want to work in a hospital. So when I heard about Mary's Woods, this retirement community, I thought, yeah, that doesn't sound very engaging. But I applied for that position because I thought, you know, I could use some experience in just the interview process. So I thought, I ought to do that. And so I did. And I went through that interview process. And when I was offered the job, I thought, yeah, I don't think so. But I didn't say, yeah, I don't think so. I said, how long do I have before I have to decide? So they gave me 4 or 5 days. And I'll tell you, one of the things that was challenging to me was imagining spending every day of my life supporting wealthy white people. It was not appealing. And I thought, yeah, I don't think so. I don't think I want to be with a bunch of successful white Americans who are, because of their success, overly privileged and have high expectations. I thought, that doesn't sound appealing to me. And so I want to tell you that I have encountered overwhelmingly the opposite of that. That's not what I encountered. Even though I work among a bunch of wealthy white people, who have the money to live in a place that I will never be able to afford to live. It is that. But what I've discovered is that these people are grateful and appreciate. They're gracious. And they're dealing with attempting to learn how to embrace the fact that they're going to die, without just giving into the fact that they're already there. They still want to live. There's a lot of living, by the way, that happens at Mary's Woods. I think it might be easy to imagine, you know, this is kind of that step before. It's not that at all. It's a very vibrant, vital, engaging community in so many ways. And it's life-giving for me to be part of that. And so I'll stop. I guess I'm close enough to stop to say thank you again. And my experience of the pandemic, our experience, since Alpha's had to kind of witness it for me more than anything, has been a wonderful experience. I have not worked during the last 2.5 years, ever. I've worked every week, every day. And when I finished that residency at Providence Portland Hospital, I already had a job. I'd already said yes, and they were just giving me the time to finish the residency. So I have never been unemployed, which I find amazing, you know, shocking even, that I made the transition from church, from pastor, to the world, to community, to chaplain. And I'll stop there.
Thanks, Lou. And hold on, hang out here for just 1 second. I am struck, like Linda asked about that Brueggemann quote. I am struck by that the world for which you have been prepared is being taken away from you. And the first half of that feels so disheartening as I imagine my own life. And then his comment, and that by the grace of God, which is a wonderful statement, but more difficult to live into. And so I love it that the next thing you said is, you found that when the world for which you had been prepared was taken away from you, you nonetheless discovered it to be life-giving. And I'm grateful you said that. I'm grateful for the hope that it encourages in me. And I'm grateful that you said, you know, you weren't sure about Mary's Woods and it surprised you. Its goodness surprised you. Those people's goodness surprised you. The way it was life-giving surprised you. And I'm grateful for the hope that you preached all these years and now live. Grateful for the way you articulated that these years in ministry developed in you the intention of connecting with people. That's something I'm going to pray for now. What a good way to put that. Anyway, thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for being a faithful pastor to us. Let's pray. God, who was purposeful in your connections with us, thank you for pulling us into a story that encourages us to be purposeful in our connections with others. God, thank you for Lou's ministry that began so long ago, continued here at East County, and now flourishes at Mary's Woods. Thank you for engrafting him and his family into your story. And thank you for allowing us to be part of their story. God, whose story saves our lives, we offer our thanks. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, can we thank Lou one more time here? Thanks. All right, we have 15 minutes or so for fellowship. And next week, Rhonda Bordine is going to share her story. So please come and participate and hear that as well. We'll see you back in a few.